Bored with Friends, episode 38, Heroes of Land, Air, and Sea.
I mean, I'm not allowed to tell that story because Zach wants to stay on topic.
Stay on topic.
All right, well, we got a little off topic.
Again, 40%. I'm lazy and I'm a mooch. What I do.
This is not that kind of podcast.
Welcome to Bored with Friends, the podcast about hobby gaming that puts the Zug in Zug. Get it? Do you remember that?
I do remember that. Why? How could I not remember that?
It's the most famous phrase from Warcraft 2. I mean, come on. Did they say it in Warcraft 1? I don't remember. I didn't play Warcraft. Did you play Warcraft 1?
No. Played the crap out of 2 and 3. Never played 1.
See, I played 3 like once and I don't remember much of it. But I loved Warcraft 2. That was my
three's amazing.
One of my favorite computer games of all time.
I did not ever play the campaign in Warcraft 2. I just would do the free play against bots or get my butt kicked online. I never played the campaign. I played WoW on and off for years and years. So I've since come to know the story, and it's like, man, I should have paid attention to that campaign because that was awesome.
It was a great game. Anyway, I'm Zach Dyer, and we're here to talk about board games. And I'm joined today by Sean Bissonnette.
Wow, it's almost as if nobody else. I didn't have a good joke. I got nothing. I'm back again, Zach.
Were you gonna joke that like this is your season where you're on every episode?
Yeah, this is the season of Sean. So welcome. Season one, you got 50% Sean. Season two, you got maybe 30% Sean. Season three, you're getting a good 75 to 95% Sean. And I hope everybody likes it. And me fumbling when I try to make jokes.
And every season, you got 100% me. I apologize. But it's my show. Deal with it. So the reason we're talking about Warcraft, just to explain that part of the conversation, is today we're going to be reviewing the much anticipated, by me at least, Heroes of Land, Air, and Sea from Gameland Games. But before we get into that, a couple of quick reviews about some recent plays. So I think I'll go first because I'm selfish.
Sure, go for it, man. I'm ready. I'm excited to hear all about these games.
So last month, Sean and I got to go to the Providence Gaming Guild where we tried out the prototype for Fireball Island, is, astute listeners will recall, since we did an entire episode dedicated to that. What I got to do after you left, Sean, was I stuck around and I played some games with some people, which was pretty fun. And one of the games I got introduced to was the Crown of Aragon, which is funny because when we were at PAX Unplugged, I actually saw this game, and I didn't get to sit down and do a demo of it. Devin and Dale did, and I didn't really know anything about it. I just recognized it after the fact. So one of the gentlemen who runs Providence Gaming Guild, he came up and he said, "Hey, do you want to learn a new game?" I said, "Sure." He said, "Do you want to learn a two-player game?" I said, "Sure," because I just wanted to play games. Very nice gentleman who played with me. I cannot remember his name at this point. I feel really bad for that, but it's been over a month.
Was it the guy who worked the game?
What was that?
Was it the guy who worked there who had made a different game but then didn't want you to play that game or something like that?
No. This gentleman, he had joined us for the Fireball Island demo. I think he was just there to play games. He didn't tell me that he had designed anything. But the gentleman who asked if I wanted to learn a new game, he actually turned out to be the designer of this game. He was just very humble and didn't want to talk about it. But Crown of Aragon is a two-player game. Think of it like Tug of War. Basically, you have three areas that you are trying to gain control over, and you're playing cards from your hand that give you influence over those areas. And as you, I might be focused on one, but you're focused on another, but I have to stop you because if you win on one area, you're going to win the game. It's very, if you have majority in two, or if you overdraft, overkill on one, I think, is that might have been what it was. Interesting game. You're drawing cards at the end of each turn and, you know, adding to the deck. You have each card that you play gives you special abilities so that you can, you know, you might get more cards. My strategy was to get as many cards as possible, so I had lots of options and I could combo off of each other, because normally you can only play one card, but sometimes cards will let you play more cards. So it was very interesting, like the cards that you lay out in the different areas trying to gain supremacy in the game. And as you he had dice set up to kind of keep track of what the control level was on each section, each area, each of the three spots. Mm-hmm. And you had to knock that person down to zero before you could start gaining control on an area. But it was very easy to let it get out of control. I lost spectacularly every time. But I had a lot of fun doing it, so it was a pretty cool game. And I immediately walked up and said, do you have any copies left? He happened to have some copies there, and I picked up a copy. Nice. Haven't had a chance to get it to the table at home yet, but I am looking forward to playing it some more. That was the Crown of Aragorn from... I keep wanting to call it Aragorn, but it's not.
Aragorn, Son of Arathorn?
Yeah, it's not that. From Joggle Games.
Yeah, I was trying to find it. Oh, I'm on the Joggle Games website. Go me. I should have figured that out. But that sounds cool. I like that. And it's was did he say that the guy who designed it, was he from Rhode Island, like Mass, like New England area, or was he just happening to also come from PAX?
And, like, 100%. He's from Rhode Island. He runs the Providence Gaming Guild. He's one of the people who run it anyway.
Oh. Okay, nice. Okay, I did not know that. That's awesome. That's really great.
Yeah. They, as far as I know, they're considering doing a Kickstarter for it. They just did a small print run for PAX. Yeah. I told them, hey, we'll talk about this game on the show because it was pretty fun, and they'll let us know if there's going to be a Kickstarter for it, and we'll plug that too. But as far I haven't heard back from him yet if when they're going to start that. I think if they do decide to do the Kickstarter, it's probably going to be in June, July timeframe. That's if I remember correctly. That's what he told me.
Yeah, we'll have to keep an eye out for it. Although when I Google Crown of Aragorn, a bunch of stuff comes up besides the game. So I wonder if that's I'll have to do some research and figure out why that's the case. I wonder if it's like a.
I don't know how plugged in this game is to the internet. Like how much hype they've built up for it. So we'll see.
Yeah, true. But it looks like Crown of Aragorn is a joining of multiple titles and states in the hands of the King of Aragon in the 14th and 15th century. The land of Aragon covered most of present-day France and Spain, and the political center was at Zaragoza. Mm-hmm. So it looks like it was a historical empire of some kind back in the day.
Yay, we can learn about history.
Go history.
History's fun.
Heck yeah, man. I was going to be a history teacher when I was a kid.
Yeah. So what's up with you, Sean? What have you been playing? And if you say what I think you're going to say, I am going to slap you through the microphone.
Well, first things first, Zach. The game that everybody's been anticipating for me to talk about, the unbeatable Quiplash, whichever number they're up to now. Don't pay attention to these things. I played like one round of it at my parents' house, but then I didn't feel that great, so I just went home and went to bed. So, and I don't really have a lot of, I really don't have a lot to talk about in the realm of Jackbox games this week, month, whatever, goodness. Episode. So, what I did do though, my brother and our old roommates are trying to get a weekly or bi-weekly game night going again, because you know when we lived together, we would play games almost every night. We'd play something, whether it was a board game or a video game. Like, we would do something as a group, because that's what happens when you got roommates and y'all like doing dorky stuff together. So this last Friday, at the time of recording, I played a couple of games. The first one was Hero Realms, which is a deck builder by White Wizard Games, I believe. I'm trying to double check, but yeah, White Wizard Games. It's a little bit different than something like Dominion or a lot of the other deck builders that I've played, because the objective is not to get the most victory points, which I thought was interesting. The objective is to kill each other. So you have up to four people, and just like in every deck builder, so, you know, Clank or Dominion or any of the other number of deck builders that I've played slash we've talked about on the show, there is obviously you all rotate. There's a buy, there's a, an action phase, a buy phase, you know, so forth and so on. But the way that it works is you have no negative cards in your initial starting deck. So there's not like that clank card or that trash card. You have either you have a dagger, a sword, and then various types of money for buying power. Everybody starts at, I believe, 50 health or 50 life points, whatever you want to call them. And the objective is to buy cards that are armies or units of some kind to kill the utter defeat, the other, you know, 1 to 3 players. So it's a total of 4 people that can play. So you're building up these different armies, and there are some units that, you know, just give you more buying power. There are some units that attack. There are some units that defend. So it's very simple, but there's a lot of different strategies going on. So there are 4 different kind of factions or types of cards, and they all kind of synergize with each other. So as the buying space is constantly getting refreshed, like every time you buy a card, that card's immediately refreshed. It's not refreshed at the end of the turn like it'll clank in some other games. So you need to hope that like whatever kind of faction you're going for is what's gonna pop up. Otherwise you might have to pivot and like try to just piece something together. So the 4 factions are the red cards are basically like undead. There's vampires and zombies and necromancers and stuff like that. They normally involve sacrificing other cards to do more damage, you know, that kind of thing. There's yellow cards, which appear to be like paladins and priests and clerics and stuff like that. So they tend to either do really high damage or heal, which is very, very rare in the game. So those can be powerful if you're kind of playing a lot of them together. There are blue cards, which are like rogues and assassins and thieves and stuff like that. So they either do really high damage or kind of disable your opponents. And then there are green cards, which are like druids and shamans and stuff like that. So I kind of went more towards those cards. They had taunt cards. So just like in, you know, Hearthstone, if you've ever played that, Zach, or Yu-Gi-Oh, you could have specific units you could put out in front of you that had to be, those units had to be killed first. So they had taunt on them. So like if I had one of those units out, you couldn't attack me. You would have to kill that person first. And the more units you had on the field, each of the other ones got more powerful. So that one was kind of about, you know, about like rushing monsters onto the field as much as you could. And the game was a lot of fun. And even though none of us had ever played it before, it only took, I don't know, 10 minutes to really pick it up. And it only took about 30 or 40 minutes to play. And I totally 100% should have won. But I got shafted. It was bad. It was no good. Other Zach, Mr. Flanagan, won because at some random point halfway through the game, everybody started ignoring him. So when everybody else was down into the teens for life points, he still had like 35 out of his 50, which was obnoxious. But I highly recommend the game. It's a lot of fun, and I know that I didn't necessarily do the best job of explaining it. But if you think of taking like a normal deck builder, but then kind of combining that with a TCG, so like Yu-Gi-Oh! Or Pokemon or Magic, and kind of infusing those two ideas together, and it's a really cool game. I liked it a lot. And there are also different expansions and stuff that you can get, but a lot of the expansions seem kind of overpowered compared to the base deck.
It sounded very familiar. I have heard of it, but I actually have heard of its original iteration, which was Star Realms, which is a space version of it. And that one, I have not gotten around to playing, but I was interested because on Google Play, there is a app version of Star Realms. I don't believe there's an app version of Hero Realms. I haven't checked that yet. But yeah, that's a game. Star Realms is extremely popular. I haven't gotten around to trying it. It's free on Google Play. You know what? I'm just going to install it. I'll try that. And I'll talk about it next time. But yeah, that does sound like a lot of fun, especially since it's a shorter game. Like, I'm always looking for quick games that we could play. And yeah, I'd like to try that one, I think.
Yeah, it can take a long time, but if you're just going for you know, go, since you're not trying to kind of hoard victory points and whatnot, you're just trying to get an army and kill the other person. So it makes the buying very strategic, but also more straightforward. It's like, you know, for me, I was going for green guys synergized with other green guys. So I just wanted green guys. If there are no, you know, green, if there were no green on the field or something that could heal me, then I was just passing. So the turns go by more quickly. We did try to dole out the damage relatively evenly until Ryan started being a dick, and he only started going for me, so I just killed him. But it was a good time. I liked it a lot, and yeah, it doesn't take nearly as long to play as something like Dominion.
Cool. I know how much you like deck builders, so that sounds like it's right up your alley.
Yeah, you can take deck builders and then just, you know, make it a little bit faster and let me fight in it, and it's great. I play a lot of deck builders, so I really enjoyed it.
Cool. I will have to try that one out. Next up for me, I played a game. I got to have a game night with our friends Devin and Dale, and they introduced me to a couple of new games. I brought a whole bunch of games with me, and they said, nope, we got some stuff that we want you to try. The first one I got to play was Drinking Quest. This is from Jason Anarchy, I think, is the Jason Anarchy Games. I think that's what the publisher's called. It is essentially everybody is assigned a character. You don't get to make up a character. It's an RPG style, like, I think Munchkin, but not Munchkin. Like, it's making fun of the RPG genre. But basically, you're assigned a character. It's got a goofy name, has to do with some pun of drinking like stuff. You get a character sheet, which you put your stats on that the character comes with. And then you set up different quests that you're going to go on. And everybody has to have a drink with them. It doesn't have to be alcoholic, I guess, but the gist of the game is to get drunk, basically. So you pick your beverage of choice. If you are going to play with alcohol, I do recommend you do not play with something super strong, because you'll probably be drinking a lot. And you go on these different quests. I think it starts with four quests, so there's four decks of cards. And you have these dice, because it's a role-playing, you know, genre-type game. And you start with the first quest, and you flip over the first card. And it's either a monster that you have to fight, or it's an event card that you have to using your stats that you have. You have to win the roll on that. Either way, you're rolling dice. If it's the monster that you fight, the player to your right will be the monster. And you determine initiative based on a die roll. And then you just roll back and forth with your weapons. If the monster is attacking, the player to your right is going to roll for the attack on the monster. And if you can block it, great. If you can't, you take damage. And the monster and you take damage back and forth until something's dead. If you kill the monster, you get the reward, kind of like in Munchkin. You get experience points, you get money, and you mark it down on your character sheet. If you get killed, think of it more like being knocked out. Basically, you're dead, and you come back on the next turn. Full stats, no, you just didn't win anything, basically.
There's no penalty?
Not really, no. I'm sorry, there is a penalty. If you get killed, you have to chug your beer. You have to drink the entire thing.
Oh, okay.
That's where the drinking comes into play. My apologies.
There we go.
It makes you do a check, a status check. So you have your different stats, and you have to try to beat this. So say it's the stat of sexual prowess, which is one of the ones in the game. If your character had a status of like 9 in that, you have to roll a 9 or less in order to defeat the challenge. And it's got like a little, you know, flavor text on it on what the challenge is all about. Like I think one of them that Devin had to do was he stole a wizard's hat. And if he won the status check, then he got to keep the hat, and it gave him some extra ability in the game. It's all silly stuff like that. It's extremely lighthearted. It really just comes down to dice rolls. I didn't really care for it, quite honestly. I mean, there were some funny moments in the group, but as a game, it just wasn't my thing. Maybe I just wasn't in the mood to play this type of game, but it gave me such a Munchkin vibe which, you know, Munchkin was fun back in the day. I've Munchkined out. I don't want to play that kind of game anymore. And if I'm going to, you know, drink while playing a game, I would rather play a game I know I really, that type I like to enjoy. And I will sip the drink throughout. I didn't feel like chugging beer after beer after beer and getting smashed playing a game that's not that great. But, you know, we did have some laughs during it. Like, the very last turn, Dale, who had been crushing us with her dice rolls the entire time, she failed, and she had decided wine was her beverage of choice, and she chugged the entire glass of wine. Apparently she regretted it later. But,
and I'm assuming it wasn't like a 4 ounce glass of wine. I'm assuming it was a glass of wine.
Like a full glass of wine, yeah. Yeah. I don't remember what type of wine it was for anyone who cares. But it was still, that was a funny moment. But she did it. She followed the rules of the game. I was driving afterwards because I had to pick up my sister-in-law at the airport. So I was just sipping my beer. I wasn't playing by the full rules. But, you know, we determined beforehand that that was what I was going to do.
Yeah.
So if you're looking for a lighthearted drinking game with a little bit of structure and some, you know, funny quips in it, it's not that bad. It just wasn't my cup of tea, so to speak, or a glass of beer.
Yeah, like I'm looking at the I think it sounds cool, and I've played Drunk Quest, not Drinking Quest. I played Drunk Quest, I played Red Dragon Inn, and I know I'm forgetting something else, but I've played a bunch of different essentially card games that are drinking games, and this sounds neat, and I really like the art. Like, I'm on their Kickstarter now, looking at the art on the cards is really funny. Like, I think it's,
it was goofy. Yeah, it was fun.
Yeah, I like the Dude Bro Dragon. It is a it appears to be an ice dragon surfing, and then a barbarian who may or may not be Ansel. I don't know what Ansel looks like. Looking very like freaked out that there's this water ice dragon flexing on a surfboard. But anyways, it sounds neat. I would like to try it, but if you're saying it's just all right, then, you know, I'll stick to Drunk Quest.
I haven't tried Drunk Quest. I've heard of it, but I haven't played it. But this one, I mean, yeah, I mean, you would probably, I think you and your brothers would, you would have a fun time with it. I'm not saying it's terrible. It just wasn't my thing. Like, it was a loosely, more involved drinking game. Like, there are other, you know, like you play beer pong or you play Never Have I Ever, you know, any of those drinking games that people play. This is just, you know, for nerds who like RPGs, which is fine. I just think, like, after multiple plays of this, you've worn out all the mystery behind it. So, like, that's the problem with flavor text and, you know, this style of game, just like Munchkin, once the jokes are worn out, it's like, well, there's really not much to this other than the drinking portion of it. So,
yeah,
that's all. Enough. Drinking Quest.
And speaking of unusually intricate drinking games, I can't believe I've never told you this. Mike's, one of Mike's frat brothers, it's a frat of dorks, don't worry, everybody. But one of Mike's frat brothers makes his own drinking board games. Off of, like, just, you know, he, like, there's a Pokemon one, he made a Harry Potter one, he made a Sonic one. They take hours and hours and hours to play, and they're unusually intricate boards with, like, handmade, like, cards and stuff like that. They're really, really neat, but they're not games that I think that men in their 30s are designed to play. But This just reminded me of that, because he was one of the ones who would always play Drunk Quest or Red Dragon Inn and stuff with us. Good job, Yazoo. You made a good.
Interesting.
They're pretty cool. They're very cool. I'll have him send me like a picture of some of the boards and stuff. But I've played the Pokemon one, and I've played the Sonic the Hedgehog one. Actually, the only time I've ever seen Amanda chug a beer or even drink a whole beer, she had to shotgun a beer during the Sonic the Hedgehog one because he had to go fast because it's Sonic.
He can really
that
move.
Oh, he can really move. He's got an attitude. Hilarious. All right, that's enough.
I love that cartoon.
Oh man, the Sonic Saturday Morning cartoon. Oh, whichever one the better one is. I can't remember. The one, like, Freedom Fighter one. I can't remember if that was Sonic Saturday Morning Cartoon or Sonic the just Sonic the Hedgehog.
I think it was just The Adventures of Sonic. No, one of them was called The Adventures of Sonic Hedgehog. The other was...
There was one that was, like, cool and, like, edgy, and then there was the one that was, like...
The super goofy like one. And they both had Urkel as the voice of Sonic.
Yeah, it was always Jaleel White, but it had the chicken robot. The really goofy guy.
Yeah, not that one. The one with the really good animation.
Yeah, with the good animation and the girl with the squirrel girl with the robot arm and the guy with doofy mustache and the cape. I like that one a lot.
Anyway, what else have you been playing, John?
Well, staying on topic, Zach, I played Sentinels of the Multiverse, which is a game that I used to play all the time, but have not played in a very long time. So to just quickly summarize, because I know that if you go back to year one of this podcast, I probably talked about Sentinels in Dead of Winter and nothing else.
That depends if you can get year one still.
Yeah, oh, that's fair.
If you're listening on SoundCloud, you can listen to year one. If you're still using the old iTunes feed that I still have not been able to update because Devin set it up and I don't have all the passwords and I hate iTunes, you can't get to it. So go switch over to SoundCloud, people.
If you just give me the two iTunes passwords, I will do it for you.
You could do that for me. That would be great.
Or you could just tell Devin to do it. He'll also do it.
Yeah.
Anyways, so Sentinels of the Multiverse is a deck building game, but it's a little bit different. So everybody picks imagine the Avengers. So everybody picks a different superhero, and you are all fighting a supervillain in a specific place. So there is, you know, you have your player, you have your villain, and you have your environment. In each, you know, everybody kind of takes turns doing their thing. So it's not a deck builder game in the way that you're buying cards to create a deck. You have a predetermined deck depending on what hero you choose, and you use your various powers and whatnot to either, you know, fight the bad guy, protect yourself, protect your friends, empower them. It depends on what kind of hero you play. And there are dozens of actual created by the developers, which I'm brain farting on who made the game right now. I'll look that up in a minute. And stuff that, like, user created stuff that, you know, you can just, like, Cards Against Humanity, like, download player created content off of, like, Reddit and other online forums and stuff. So my brother and Mike have, like, accumulated, like, this gigantic baseball card collecting box filled with all these different decks, like, that have come out over the years to an obnoxious degree. So you all need to, you know, work together to defeat the villain while not getting killed by him or her, and while surviving or abiding by the rules set by the environment. So as an example, one of the environments is a Colosseum, which is fitting for where we're about to go with Critical Failure. But so there will be these random monsters or mercenaries that pop up that you have to fight and beat before you can fight the villains. In every turn, a card from that deck will get flipped over, and it might mess with what you guys are trying to do with the overall, you know, taking down of the villain. And I somehow always manage to accidentally choose an unusually complicated hero that I don't really get the hang of until the game's about to end. The guy that I was last week was basically combining a Pokemon trainer with like a Prince of Persia style person. So you were summoning Jin from these little crystals, and they evolved like Digimon. And after they would be evolved, digivolved for a little while, they would devolve back to their previous state. Those Pokemon in the way that they're all trapped inside these little crystals, and I'm summoning them, but then they're digivolving when they want to attack. So most of my cards were either being able to play an additional card from my hand so I could try to upgrade one of these little guys, or being able to search my deck or my discard pile for a discarded or another one of these djinns so I'd be able to play them. The downside was that every turn the environment did damage to everybody, and these djinn had their own health, so every time I would actually summon somebody, they would instantly die. So I didn't get to do anything until I literally, the I took away the one HP that the villain had left for us to win the game. That's the one thing I did in the hour or so it took us to play the game.
You scored the kill shot.
Yeah. You know what? I kill stole everybody else. Mike tanked. Ryan always plays somebody that does an unusual amount of damage. Flanny also tanked, and I did nothing. I did one damage, and it was fantastic and glorious. And every turn, I'd be like, all right, guys, check out what I'm going to do. I'm going to search my deck for a Jhin and place it into my hand. And then I'm going to use my power to play one of those Jhin. And I'm going to cross my fingers that the environment doesn't do 4 damage. But it always did 4 damage, and I always died.
That's upsetting.
But I had fun. I mean, I like Sentinels. You know, it does take a while to play, and I've never had to control the villain or the environment, so I just kind of zone out until it's my turn. So it's it can be very involved and can be very complicated, but if you're just playing your role, then it's a lot of fun. You just got to, if you're playing with people who have played a lot before, ask who to choose, because the only time that I was super successful at playing the game was when I played their ripoff of Deadpool, because essentially all his cards allowed you to play more cards and then draw cards and play more cards. So you get to string together a lot of stuff because, you know, Deadpool can just kind of do whatever he wants. So that was a lot of fun.
I don't recall much of the game that I played with you guys. I remember it was fun. It just didn't stand out as a game I wanted to keep playing at the time. I'd probably try it again.
Yeah. It's you need to have at least, you know, 4 or more people playing to really get get into it. Like I've played with just 3 people and it's kind of whatever. But yeah, it's a lot of fun, but it also isn't for everyone. And I will say that I don't necessarily have fun every time I play, but overall I do like the game.
I vaguely remember having an experience like you just described where I wasn't able to do much, and I think that was part of my problem with the game, is just there's so many choices of, you know, heroes, and they're not all well-suited for every situation.
Yeah, exactly.
No. And to answer you earlier, it's Greater Than Games who publishes that.
Thank you. Oh, yeah. My goodness, I knew that. Oh, and actually, speaking of that, they're actually making an RPG as well. I believe it's based on the Fate system. Mm-hmm. I bought their Kickstarter is coming out sometime this summer. It's either June or July. And the starter pack is, it's just like they come in like little comic books. It's like issues 1 through 6, and 1 and 6 are fixed, but 2 through 5, you can play in whatever order you want. There's no character creator right now. You just play from the initial 6, either 5 or 6 heroes that came out when the game first came out years ago. So I'm interested to try that after we play Venom Assault.
Cool. We should probably do that.
Yeah, we should. They were nice enough to give us the game information ahead of time, and it's just we haven't looked at the Savage Worlds book, and we just need to do that.
Well, I started outlining the campaign I want to do for it. I just haven't... I'm not fully comfortable with character creation with the Savage Worlds system yet. So we're still working on that. I don't even know if I announced that on the show. We were going to do a side cast of Critical Failure with the Venom Assault universe. Names are escaping me at the moment. From Spyglass Games, they put out the RPG system for the Venom Assault universe, the Freedom Squadron, and we were going to do that and put it out as a way to, you know, promote the system. And also, I want to play in a G.I. Joe-like universe. That'll be a lot of fun.
Gojo, man. I mean, we all have a lot of ideas for campaigns, and it'll be good to take a break from our boys trying to find the not Infinity Stones. So it'll be fun.
And you get to play a character instead of, and I'm going to try to run a campaign. That'll be interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I don't do as much preparation as I should do, because I feel like I get too in my head if I prepare too much. But it is a good improv opportunity. It's easier to do in person because you can see people's expressions, like when we're all just on Skype with no face cam, because for some reason everybody's computers crap themselves. It's harder to pick up on people's like emotions and how they feel about what you're doing. But it's fun. I very much enjoy GMing, DMing.
Yeah. All right. Well, last up for me, I got introduced to another new game, Castles of Caladale, from our, I guess they're our favorite publisher this year, because we talk so much about them, Renegade Games.
Oh, I was waiting for that.
This one is, I spoiler alert, I like this one a lot. It's a tile laying game. So I guess the idea is each player is a different race, and your castles, your strongholds, have been blown apart by some magical cataclysm. And the tiles are all different pieces of people's castles. So there's different structures. There's different type of structures. You know, the humans have the stones from, you know, building a more traditional castle. The elven-like creatures have, you know, more earth and trees and stuff like that. And then there's this it looks like a house from like some like Norway or something like that. I don't know. Basically, you're drafting tiles on your turn. There's a grid of tiles that you can choose from, and each turn you take one, and then you take one from the pile, and you can fill in the spot that you took from. You can also take a face down tile from the pile. The neat thing about this game is you can rearrange your tiles at any time. So you could start taking tiles and, you know, working on your structure while people are taking their tiles. So it plays extremely fast. It's not very interactive other than when you're taking tiles that somebody else might want. But there's very loose rules on how you can build your castles. You start with a door and you have a ground level. And you can start rearranging the castles. The rules are you have to put the same type of structure with that same type of structure. So if I have a stone castle wall, it has to go to stone. The walls also have to be physically capable of holding each other up. So if there's a gap in the wall, it has to make sense on where it is. Some of the tiles have two building types on them, so that makes it easier for you to transition from one building type to another. And then towers have to be, they're the top. You can't build on top of a tower, basically, unless you build around it and have open air, like a hole in the castle. So you can make some really wacky and interesting structures. And then at the if you can't place something, you can take the tile and place it face down in your player area, and it just counts as a point at the end of the game. Sometimes you might want to do that. If you can't use a tile, but you know somebody else can, you could take that and just say, like, haha, I'm just getting a point later. At the end of the game, when you score, any open areas that are not finished, those count as negative points. And then you count up all the tiles. They're all worth, I think, 2 points each, and then towers are worth a bonus point for every flag that's on them. And then, you know, person with most points wins. It played extremely fast. It was a really nice, light tile laying game. I really enjoyed it, actually. It was a lot of fun. And I won.
Wait, when you... Congratulations. No, when you were explaining how the game worked, I was like, oh, this game's going to take a while. And then the Board Game Geek said 30 minutes. I was like, there's no way this takes 30 minutes, but that's awesome.
It plays extremely fast because you're just constantly taking tiles. Like, you know, I would take a tile, and as I'm looking to place it, you don't have to wait. You know, you just, Devin would take his tile, and then Dale took her tile, and we just kept going back and forth. And then the best part is you can rearrange your castle at any time. So, you know, during downtime, you're working on rearranging your castle to make the optimum, you know, set up so you can get as many points as possible. Gotcha. You can take the whole thing apart and put it all back together again while you're waiting. Like, it was great. I liked it a lot. I had seen it demoing at PAX Unplugged, but I hadn't gotten to do it. But Dale had gotten a copy of it, and she showed it to me, and I was like, yep, we're going to play this. This is going to be fun. Because I like tile laying games. I think it's a lot of fun. And because it's such a loose structure on how you can place the tiles, like once you, it's not like a, you know, Carcassonne where once it's placed, you can't move the tile again. In this one, you know, as you're building your castle, you can rearrange it at any time and reconstruct. It makes it a very interesting setup. So that's Castles of Caladale from Renegade Games.
Boom, that's awesome. I really like that a lot. That sounds neat. I'd like to try that.
It's a nice filler game.
Nice, man. All right, that's awesome.
All right. Anything else you wanted to talk about, Sean?
Nah, man. I mean, how was your day? How you doing?
Oh, well, you would know. We just work together.
I know. I didn't know how the rest of your day went after I left. I know that it can be pretty rough when I'm not there.
Yes. We all feel that hole in the world that you leave.
I've heard I have that effect on people.
All right. Let's head over to the rules breakdown of our review game today, Heroes of Land, Air, and Sea.
Okay. Zug, everybody.
Zorbu. Heroes of Land, Air, and Sea is a 4X strategy game from Gamelim Games designed by Scott Elms. In Heroes of Land, Air, and Sea, players take control of different races and explore the world of Ogmore, exploit its resources, expand across the land, and exterminate their enemies. The game ends if one of the ending conditions is met, whether a player has built all three of their towers, all the exploration tokens have been revealed, a player has recruited all possible troops, or one player has destroyed the stronghold of another. If any one of these conditions is met, one more round is played, points are added up, and the player with the most victory points wins. Each round, a player will get two actions. They use their action tokens to perform whatever tasks they want, provided they have the resources to do it. On a player's turn, they will choose either a command action or a capital action. Command actions consist of marching, flying, sailing, and casting spells. If a player chooses to do one of these actions, they can also muster an action. Using a peon from their courtyard, they can perform one additional command action on their turn. If a movement action is performed, and one player enters a region controlled by another, then a battle will take place. Combat is fairly simple in this game. First spells are cast, then troops' values are totaled, and finally, players simultaneously select a combat maneuver card. The players reveal the cards chosen, and resources are paid for the card. The final combat power is totaled, and the combat is resolved. Damage is dealt out to the loser's troops and buildings. Any remaining troops will retreat from the region. Capital actions consist of recruiting, building, researching, and taxing. If a player performs a capital action, all other players can choose to follow it by using a peon from their courtyard and placing it on the corresponding action space on their player board. It should probably go without saying, if you don't have a spare peon in your courtyard, you can't perform the follow or muster actions. After each player has used their main action tokens, the round ends. Resources are collected for each occupied region with a peon in it, and new spell cards are dealt out. Action tokens are then reset, and a new round begins. Once a victory condition is triggered, it cannot be undone. The final round begins. After the final round, the bonuses are given. Scores are tallied, and a winner is declared. They then read their race's victory passage from the book. Now, this is an extremely bare-bones rundown of the mechanics of this game, so let's get back to the friends and find out what we thought of Heroes of Land, Air, and Sea. And we're back talking about Heroes of Land, Air, and Sea from Gamelin Games, designed by Scott Elms. Heroes of Land, Air, and Sea, Sean, it's basically Warcraft 2, the board game. Not even going to lie.
That's the song that it played in the menu.
Oh, all right.
Anyways, I love Warcraft. I love all of it. That is a fictional universe that I very much enjoy. Very well-told story. And Heroes Land, Air, and Sea captures the magic of those classic RTSs by making it classicer, by making it cardboard and plastic instead of computers.
I was going to say the exact same thing. Warcraft 2 was one of my favorite games growing up because I love real-time strategy games. I had endless fun. Dialing up my 56K modem, connecting with my uncle or my cousins or anybody else who had this game and playing online and, you know, building up my orc army or my human army and trying to decimate each other. And I usually lost, but it was a lot of fun. StarCraft, Warcraft, what was the other one? Command and Conquer? Yeah.
I never played Command and Conquer. I mean, you know, if we want to look at Age of Empires, but that's all humans and history instead. But, I mean, Warcraft 2 and 3 specifically were what I was always about. I didn't play StarCraft. I didn't play Command and Conquer. It was all Warcraft, baby. All the RTS goodness that would, all the zugs I'd ever want.
Indeed. So this game is more than just orcs and humans, luckily. But I got to say, when I first heard of what it was going to be, because Gamelan Games, just for a little history here, because we've reviewed several of their games on the show, they're very well known for the Tiny Epic series. So yeah. I don't know if this came about because of all the jokes about, like, they can only do the Tiny Epic games. And they just said, okay, fine. We'll give you a huge box game. This is a huge game. Even if you just get the base game, the box, you could fit every Tiny Epic game inside this box and still have room for, like, I don't know, 2 other games or, you know, regular size. It's gigantic. When I first saw the pictures on the Kickstarter of what it was going to be, I was super impressed by the miniatures. I really liked the look of the game. And what sold me the most was when I found out they were going to have the follow mechanic, very similar to what was in one of my favorite Tiny Epic games, Tiny Epic Galaxies, how you could follow each other, which keeps it so much more interesting because every turn, everybody's involved all the time. To bury the lead there, that is one of my favorite mechanics, and I really liked it in this game. But when you first saw the game, Sean, like when I opened up the Kickstarter box and started setting it up, what were your first impressions?
What the hell are we doing?
Oh, okay.
So when I saw how intense the box was, you're like, oh yeah, this is like Warcraft the game. I was like, all right, cool. But then, like, as we're undoing this, all of these cardboards and all of the everything, I was like, oh my god, what are we getting into? This is not like a like what is this? This is gonna be so much. I luckily was wrong. I mean, it is a lot, but like it's so much fun, and yeah, you do get to interact on everybody's turn, so it's not like you're just sitting there waiting for it to be your turn. You're engaged the entire time. The miniatures are all really, really, really well done. So for, you know, a company that's made a lot of money making very nice little wooden block men with wooden block paraphernalia to put on them, these plastic models and even the cardboard models for the airships, the boats, and the structures are all super, super well done, and the art on the cards is all cool. Like, everything's really, really awesome, and it does make you feel like, you know, the, granted, it's not, you know, Alliance and Horde, it's all the, you know, very very xenophobic, I guess, or racial, doesn't matter, it's every race out for themselves, but it's really awesome. I really, really like it a lot, and Everything's great, Zach. I'm going to stop rambling. I ramble too much. I was told that the other day.
It's okay. No, you're right. It does come with some gorgeous miniatures. I mean, the production value on this game is off the charts, I think would be the way to describe it, which is true of pretty much all of Gamelan Games. You know, they do stellar productions. I mean, the boxes are, you know, nice, thick cardboard, everything has, you know, artwork all over it. The artwork in this game, I really dig it. It's just fun, and it matches the theme perfectly. Everything about it is just, it looks great. Gameplay-wise, it's a real-time strategy game in a box. That's probably my favorite part. You know, even when it's my turn, I'm choosing what my action is to do. The way you use your peons to follow other people, you always want to keep them in reserve because you want to know, like, okay, who's doing this? You're always waiting for somebody else to do something that you want so that you can follow them on your turn. That way you don't waste your actions, because that way it has the two types of actions you can do, the command action versus the what did they call it? The city action or something, or the castle action. I don't remember. There's two types of actions.
The actions are grouped up, so you're either doing some kind of recruitment base or some kind of, basically something for your base, and then something for exploring.
But the command actions are the ones that you can only do. They can't be followed, but you can muster them so you can double up. when you do one,
yeah.
Which is pretty cool too. So it's nice because everybody's always paying attention every single turn. There's almost no downtime in this game, which leads to one thing I would complain about, especially if you're first learning it. There's so much you got to read. You got to know your faction. There's like the last game that you and I played together, we tried it two player, and I was playing as the undead, who are part of the expansion factions. And I think you were playing as the goblins at the time. And,
yeah.
You know, I'm trying to pay attention to what you're doing, but also I'm trying to read what all of my structures can do as I level up my castle, as I, you know, and build new things. And there's no downtime to actually sit and read those things. So I guess that's one detriment. But once you start to learn the factions and learn how they play, it's not that hard, really.
Mm. I mean, not that the initial races are basic in any way, because I'm sure there's a lot of really really cool stuff you can do, but it seems like the mechanics for the humans, the orcs, the dwarves, and the elves are a little bit more straightforward. Like with the undead, like you were like collecting souls and doing all sorts of other kind of side stuff, because you know the whole thing with the undead is you know, you didn't play Warcraft 3, but the Scourge going across Lordaeron, and every time somebody dies, they get more people, and how are you supposed to stop them? Oh my goodness, and that's why the undead are still the bad guys in even a lot of the WoW expansions, because it's just, it's a really cool, people love zombies, number one, but it's just a really like cool idea that you can't really, the train keeps on rolling no matter what you do. Mm-hmm. But that also means that there's a lot more stuff going on compared to, you know, the goblins, which was basically the goblins are get as many dudes near each other, because the more you have, the more powerful each one is, which is exactly like that, the druid kind of cards I was playing in Hero Quest. That's kind of funny, actually.
Hmm. Yeah, I like that each faction plays a little bit differently. Like, I had a chance to play as the elves, the dwarves, and the undead so far. And I don't have a favorite yet, but each one had its own feel. Like the elves, you're right, they come from the base game. They're very, the base game factions seem a little bit more straightforward. The elves were all about getting magic and, you know, comboing up different, you know, magical type things. All their buildings let you gain more magic abilities, which was really cool. The dwarves, they were more about exploring, I feel, like, which was surprising to me. I thought they would be more warlike, but then you also had the orcs who they just wanted to keep, you know, fighting. The game forces you to fight. Like, there's not enough, you know, you can't do a turtle strategy in this kind of game. You can't stay back. You have to fight. Because one of the rules of the game, because it's a 4X game, you can explore, you can exploit, you can exterminate, and you can exfoliate or something. I don't remember what the fourth one is.
You can exfoliate your skin.
Yes. But basically, you know, each of those 4X elements can pertain to a way that the game ends. And one of the things that you can do is, you know, you're trying to build these towers. You're trying to build up your, you know, your society. Like, almost like a civ building game. But the towers have a rule on them. They can only go on one tower per island. So you have to explore. You have to expand out to the other islands in order to build your towers. But on those islands, you're almost definitely going to meet up with another faction, which is going to lead to war. So you're going to be fighting. Like, it's a very claustrophobic world that you live in. But it's fun, because now you're always thinking, like, okay, I got to build up my armies, but I also want to explore. I want to flip over these, you know, these tokens that are on the board, and I want to get these benefits, or not benefits sometimes. I want to build a boat. I want to go out into the water, and I want to explore these tokens. I still haven't built an aircraft yet. We've played this game 3 times now, and I still haven't built an airship, which is upsetting to me. So I want to play it again.
I still haven't built either. I kept it nice and straightforward. I mean, and sorry, I misspoke with the goblins. The goblins are all about getting as many other goblins out into the world as humanly possible. But the warriors are stronger if you have at least 3 of them in a party.
Yeah, that was a cool ability of yours, and it worked to my downfall.
Oh, yeah, dude. I definitely liked the goblins more than the human. I mean, because in RTSs, I like to kind of consolidate my power and then like go for like the big cool fight. I don't like rushing, and the orcs are very much get in there and get in there and win nice and quick. Just fight, because you know it's true to the stereotype of you know an orcish horde going through and doing stuff. And then the humans were a little bit of all around, because humans are always all around at everything. But the goblins were just, you know, however it is you want to play the game, just get all your units out. So that means I got to have a lot of actions. If, you know, if we had been playing with three other people if we had been playing a four-player game, I always had so many serfs. I could have had so many extra actions. It would have been ridiculous. But yeah, the goblins were really, really fun, and the game was really fun. But I didn't build any aircrafts. I didn't build any boats. I just stuck to exploring and harvesting. And spoiler alert, I won.
You won by 1 point.
1 point, the 1 point that mattered. technically the 2 points that mattered. The one
I think that's two games in a row that we've done review games and you won by 1 point.
Yeah, but I still won. But it's true, every time I do win, it's barely. I never just like have like a clear victory. I either have horrible defeats like in a Monopoly Gamer, or I have one you know percentile victories.
Whatever, you earned that victory. If like I did take the time to build a boat that round, because it's part of the game. I wanted to see what would happen, and I thought it was going to be like a you know this really powerful thing. But I wanted to see what those sea tiles had, because I wanted to explore more. And I realized, oh, I could take my boat, and I can go to the other side of the map where you had what I thought was going to be some easy prey for my undead horde. Because you just had two peons sitting there, hanging out, chilling on an island beach somewhere, you know, not doing anything. So I brought my boat over with my Grim Reaper character, and I think I had a peon with him. And my plan was to bring the boat over, kill your guys, and then use the peon to build my third tower. And I thought, this is it. This is how I'm going to win the game. And then you busted out this card that for the combat system, which we haven't talked about much yet. And you ended up like destroying me with two peons. I was very upset by this.
Yeah. I forgot exactly what the stratagem was, but I had the two peons. And then, I knew that you didn't have enough magic to play, like, the one card that would counter the card that was going to give me plus five or whatever it was.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, cool. So he could counter me if I play most of these cards, but he literally can do nothing if I play this card. So I won. I was so smug about it, too. I just, like, threw it down. I'm like, yeah, so this is how it's going to go.
Oh, so mad. But it was funny. Like, it was really cool to see that happen. Like, to see the underdog in that situation, which was your two little peon goblins, just rise up and crush my guys. I mean, I had the boat. I had a hero character there. I mean, I should have, by all accounts, have won that, but I didn't. The way combat works is very interesting. I mean, if you engage in combat, you first get to cast spells. I think the defending player gets to go first, and then the attacker gets to cast a spell. And then you count up the total value of your attack power each, and your defending power, I guess. And then you get to play these cards. And you each take, you, everybody has the same cards, the same hand. And the cards do different things. Like, they might boost your attack. They might get to run away. You get to bring in troops from another portion of an adjacent, you know, area. Whatever you want to do. And you play your cards face down, and you simultaneously reveal, and then you see what changed and whoever won. Combat deals out damage in specific order, and you know you're going to lose some troops, and then the rest run away if it didn't do that much damage. Really easy, simple to use combat strategy. I know that sounded way more complicated than it is, but once you do it the first time, you're like, okay, I got this. But all the cards cost something. That's what really matters. Like you pointed out, I didn't have the mana to play the card that would have countered you. So that's what you got to pay attention to. That's part of the strategy, and it was great.
Yeah, man. I lucked out. I mean, you playing that card was obviously a brilliant and fantastic move, but It's not like I calculated that. It's like you just happened to use your magic on the previous round for something else. So I took the time to notice that, but it's not like I was like, you've activated my trap card. Like, it was just, it just kind of, I was observant enough to notice, and I won because of it.
Now, I don't remember what triggered the end game in that particular match.
It was either me building my third tower or getting all my dudes out.
You built the third tower. You almost had all your guys out too, but that's what it was. Yeah. But the neat thing is, once you built that, like, I still thought, hey, there's a chance I could win here because I was ahead of you in points, and I knew we still hadn't calculated all the bonuses. And then you ended up winning by 1 point. Like, that's what it came down to, was 1 point. It was pretty cool.
Yeah, and then when we were done, when we were packing up, you're like, did you know you were gonna win? And I was like, I don't know. I was pretty sure I was good. Like, I had no idea. I was just like, I'm just gonna, if I hadn't built my third tower to then get the victory points for building that other tower, I think on like the next turn I was gonna have my last couple dudes come out. So like, I was like, well, I'll get victory points for having the tower. I won't get victory points for having my last two serfs out, so I'm going to build the tower.
That was a good move.
Yeah, so I lucked out.
And if you hadn't won that victory, that combat that occurred, I probably would have gained enough points from that, and also I would have built my tower on the next turn.
Yeah, and then I would have lost. So yeah. those two little serfs are the MVP. I'm going to say that one of them went on to become Saul.
Oh, man. That brings me to, I do have one gripe with this game, major gripe. The other one was kind of minor. It's the length. It's not a game I'm going to get to take out that often. Because we tried playing this game 3 times, and it just was taking too long, honestly. we had to stop after, I don't know, an hour and a half, 2 hours. It was going on for a long period of time because you have to wait for an end game to be triggered. There's no set end thing to happen. I mean, would you agree with that?
No, I would agree. It takes a long time to play. I mean, when just the two of us played, when just the two of us played, it was still over an hour, and we knew what we were doing. And it still took a long time for the two of us alone. Never mind when we were trying to play it with Scott and Walt Chad. Like, it's just, it took a while. And if you are playing with a group of people and one of you have played or none of you had played, be prepared to be here doing this for 2-3 hours maybe.
Yeah.
It's a lot of fun, but it is a feature length movie in a long one. It's to play this game, but it is good and it is fun. It is something, I would probably, if you're having a game night and you're going to play this game is the night.
Yeah. It's a detriment, like I said, but at the same time, you're right. You just basically have to schedule when you're going to play this game. This isn't a, hey, let's bust out Heroes of Land, Air, and Sea at the end of the night. No, make this your game night. Say, we're playing this. Everybody figure out what factions you want because this is going to happen. Because I backed the Kickstarter and got the expansion with it, obviously, that came with, you have 8 factions total to choose from right now. And it can play up to 6 players at the moment. So it could be an extremely long game. I don't think I'd ever want to play this with 6 players. With 2, it wasn't as interesting as far as interaction, because it took us a while to get to each other. And by then I was like, I have to get over there, because the way the undead play, I have to be killing your guys. And you are just pumping out units, and you're going to cause the end game before I even get over there and start killing you. That's why I went and invaded your island. So you definitely want to really look at the factions first and see who's going to fit the style of game that you're in. I don't think I'd want to play this with more than 4 players, though.
No, probably not. I mean, I would. It's like, guys, we're going to do this. It's going to be all day. Mm-hmm. Let's have, the dorkiest day ever. Then I'd try it out. But yeah, 6 is a lot of people. I mean, if you had 6 people that knew how to play the game, I would say that, I'm not an expert in the game, but I can play it reasonably well without it needing to be re-explained to me. it would probably take six people 4 or 5 hours to play.
Possibly, yeah. It could be fun, though. I mean, yeah, you're right. If we had a group of people who are willing to commit a whole day to it, I might try it. But a normal game day, I'm like, okay, I got four people coming over. We're playing Heroes of Land, Air, and Sea. Just, you know, get ready to commit, like, a good 3 hours to this. Yeah. In box. And I believe there will be a reprint of the original Kickstarter with it. And it's going to add a seventh player option, which is just crazy to me. But that's what's going to happen. it's got the merfolk and the air, the bird folk in it. Merfolk and bird folk. The crazy thing about that, I don't know if you looked at the pictures, Sean, but the...
Yeah, there's a fifth island raised above the...
Yeah.
So I assume that that has to be where the bird folk start?
Yeah. The bird folk have a flying island, and the merfolk, you put this blue transparency over it. So I guess the way they're going to play is underwater, which would be interesting because you presumably can't reach those people without using a boat. So
I was like, how do you assault their cities if they're underwater?
That's what I'm curious about. I'll have to check it out. I don't know if I'd back it. Just because I do usually don't get expansions for games. I mean, I got the expansion with this one because it came with the Kickstarter. Also, because the factions in the first expansion for this game are way more interesting than the base game ones. I mean, you got the lizard men, the undead, the goblins, and the lionkin, which I still haven't played as, but I'm very interested as playing to play as the lionkin. It's way more interesting than, you know, humans, orcs. Like, you see them in everything. It's they're the boring factions. Elves, you know, even the dwarves. But
they're basic.
So, stellar production. So I can't wait to see what else happens with this.
Oh, sidebar, Zach. So I'm looking at the box right now. The fourth axe of Explore, Expand, Exploit, and...
Exterminate.
Yep.
I think I said exterminate.
Oh, okay. I was gonna. When didn't you say?
I don't remember.
Because I was gonna say exterminate, like in the voice, but I'm not gonna blow out everybody's ears, so it's fine.
Exterminate.
Exterminate. Anyways,
let's do a Doctor Who version of Heroes of Land, Air, and Sea.
Does everybody be a different doctor? Because then aren't we just playing the Doctor Who game?
Nah, I just use the, like, you have Suntarans, Daleks, Cybermen, and Zygons. That's perfect right there.
I want to be Rhino Cop.
Oh, the Jadoon?
Yeah, I want to be Rhino Cop. I want to be Rhino Cop and weird potato face, big ear cyber space soldiers.
The Suntarans.
Oh yeah, the other Sun. Yes, you're right. Yes. The Suntarans. But yeah, I want to be Rhino Cop. I want to be Rhino Cop along with Captain Jack because, you know, I guess he can just be hanging out with the Rhino Cops.
This will be the StarCraft version of Heroes of Land, Air, and Sea, basically.
Yes. And there we go.
I was trying to think about that. Like, how would they do a space version of this? And because there's no sea in space, like, you know, what would you do with that? You're just, you know, flying around spaceships. I guess they could have a planet or whatever. Or in StarCraft, they had those platforms. I don't know.
Well, for D&D, there's a kind of alternative setting called Spelljammers, where basically, I haven't been able to figure out if it's planets or solar systems. Are essentially in like these glass balls, so there'd be like a small cluster of planets, and then that would be like space, like within, you know, the area that you would understand as your system, and then you go outside of it and it's just wild space. So then that just reminds me of Firefly with the weird crazy people, can't remember what they're called, the murder hobos,
the Reavers.
Reavers, yes. Okay, cool. Wow, how could I not remember that? Doesn't matter. So you could be the heroes of land, space, and deep space, or wild space.
Yeah, all right.
And in that version of the game, there are hippopotamus people that wear like 19th century British military uniforms and smoke cigars and have muskets.
Oh, I 100% want to play that faction.
Yeah, I wish. I wish they were a playable race in normal D&D. But now that I know that they exist, they are 100% going to be in our game because I need there to be a British hippo spouting out different military orders. They're apparently very militaristic and very proper. So
I can't wait to hear what voice you come up with for that.
It'll have to be British because I'm pretty sure they're all British military gentlemen.
Wow. I think we got off topic. What were we talking about?
We were talking about the heroes of land space and wild space.
Oh, all right. Cool. No, it's a fantastic game. I mean, my final thoughts on this, I definitely recommend it. If you ever liked a real-time strategy game, this is going to be a, you know, if you played Warcraft 2, if you played Warcraft 3, if you played Starcraft, any of those types of games on computer, this is that game in a box. And it's phenomenal. I think even Walt Chad, he was like blown away by it. He usually is very critical of the miniatures. He's like, wow, these are actually really good, which is high praise from him. But it's just it's a gorgeous game, and it looks amazing to have. It does not fit on standard Kalex shelves. So any gamers out there who use those to store their games, you're putting this on top of them. But it's totally worth it. So check out the Kickstarter, because like I said, if you missed out on the first one, I'm pretty sure you're going to be able to get the reprint with that Kickstarter. If not, I'm sorry. I don't know why they wouldn't do that, though. But it is pretty cool. Just overall, I'm having a blast with it. I can't wait to schedule the next game night to play this and try another faction, because there's just so much you can explore with this game. What are your final thoughts on this, Sean?
So final thoughts, very much enjoyed it. There's a lot of fun to be had, and especially if you have any nostalgia for these old, because there aren't that many of them anymore, at least not that in the mainstream RTS games. If you like the fantasy setting, if you like exploring and exterminating and such, definitely check it out. It is a commitment to play the game, but so can the Tiny Epic games, in my experience, at least the first time. This will be longer than those. But yeah, overall, I really enjoyed it, and I would wholeheartedly recommend it.
Cool. So that is our thoughts on Heroes of Land, Air, and Sea. It's not exactly a first impressions review, because we did play two total games in length, but we tried it three times. But I want to keep playing it, so definitely check that out. But anything else you want to talk about, Sean?
Nah, man, that's it. Let's wrap it up here.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this show, why not check out some of the other projects on the In All the Nerdy Fun network, including Critical Failure, a show where a bunch of people with absolutely no experience with RPGs decide to sit down and try Dungeons & Dragons, or Bored with Friends. It's a book club-style show where we just discuss things other than board games, like comic books, movies, TV shows, and just all sorts of pretty much anything, really. Also, check out our YouTube channel, In All the Nerdy Fun, where we're going to have video reviews of different board games, all the podcasts are available on there to listen to, and who knows what other projects might show up. If you really enjoyed this show, reach out to us on Twitter and let us know, at Bored with Friend, like us on Facebook, or give us an iTunes review, always helpful. Or head on over to our website, boardwithfriends.blogspot.com. Either way, thanks for listening.
Something you're doing?
Ready to work.
Whoa, what? Yes, me lord.
I don't want to.
I'm not dead.